Welcome, everybody, to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Our very special guest today is Ewan Curry, the lead singer and guitarist for Canadian rock band sensations, The Sheepdogs. Trends come and go, styles fall in and out of fashion, but The Sheepdogs remain steadfast in their commitment to rock and roll excellence. Since their inception, the band has always sought to play the kind of music they themselves love, pure, simple, good time music. As singer-guitarist Ewan Curry puts it, it's no surprise the band's latest album, Future Nostalgia, is firmly rooted in the rock tradition that listeners have come to expect from the boys. The idea was simple: find a nice, quiet, secluded place and make a record packed with all the hot guitar licks and sing-along choruses they could muster. So the band holed up in a rented house in the remote, idyllic setting of Stony Lake, Ontario, and set about creating a studio where they could work all hours of the day. We wanted to cut out all the noise and get back to a place where we could just fully immerse ourselves in music, says Curry, who took on production duties for the album. We worked hard, but we also made sure to keep it loose and have ourselves a good time. Future Nostalgia is the middle ground between the Juno-winning platinum-certified Learn and Burn, which spawned the rock radio staple, I Don't Know, and its equally successful follow-up, 2012's The Sheepdogs, featuring the instantly recognizable gold-certified singles Feeling Good and The Way It Is. The former was recorded by Curry and the band in their hometown in Saskatoon before they were propelled to fame as the first unsigned band to grace the cover of Rolling Stone, pressure-free and at their own pace. Its follow-up, however, recorded in Nashville with producer and Black Keys drummer Patrick Carney, was a much more formal and rigid studio experience. This time, the band aimed to combine the successes and lessons learned from these opposite ends of the recording spectrum. Future Nostalgia builds upon the Sheepdogs' foundation of feel-good vocal harmonizing and nasty guitar jamming. Now the Sheepdogs are eager to embark on the next leg of their journey, which will involve many miles logged and stages played. I'm excited for people to hear the album because it's a labor of love, Curry says proudly. Now it's just about getting it out there and getting people into it. From their cramped Saskatchewan jam space to gold and platinum records and shows with rock icons, the Sheepdogs haven't strayed from their goal of sharing pure, passionate rock and roll with anyone who will listen, and Future Nostalgia is packed with it. Formed in Saskatoon in 2006, the Sheepdogs have received widespread acclaim for their bold and beautiful take on classic guitar rock, evinced on three self-funded, independently released albums. The band's hard work, determination, and impressive chops have earned them a fervent fan following, leading to the accumulation of various achievements and awards, including 4 Juno Awards, 7 Juno nominations, gold certification for the Sheepdogs, and platinum certification for Learn and Burn. The band's 2012 self-titled LP debuted at number one on the top 200 SoundScan chart and garnered 3 number one singles at rock radio, including gold certified tracks, Feeling Good, and The Way It Is. As impassioned on stage as they are on record, the Sheepdogs have spent much of their musical lifetime on the road playing innumerable headline shows and festival appearances worldwide. It's my great pleasure to welcome to the show today lead singer, guitarist, and songwriter for the Sheepdogs, Ewan Curry. Hello, Ewan.
Howdy, how you doing?
Very good, thank you. Thank you for being on the show today. Where are you calling from today?
I am currently in Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Oh, you're in Toronto. So what's going on in Toronto? Do you have? I know you have some dates coming up in Canada. And then you're off to the UK, Belgium, the Netherlands, and Germany, right?
That's right. We're touring a lot. We're in the middle of a 35-show Canadian tour, and I have a day off today in Toronto, and I'm doing some little press things, and then heading out to the East Coast of Canada, and then across the pond to Europe and the UK.
Yeah, Toronto's a great musical town. I mean, going way back, it was Toronto that would bring in the black artist from the U.S. They couldn't find too many gigs to play, and I guess in the United States back in the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s, and they would all perform in Toronto. So it's a great hub. It's always been a great and historic hub for music. Just a great place for music.
Yeah, it is, and it still is. I think there's a big connection with Jamaica in the 70s as well. A lot of the immigrants and sort of the reggae music. If you look at the modern side of things, your Biebers and all that kind of, and Drake and everything, they're all from here too, basically.
Now, originally you're from Australia, is that right?
Yeah, I was born in Australia and lived there until I was about 10 years old.
What are your fond memories of Australia?
I remember cricket. I was really into sports, cricket and Aussie rules football, mm-hmm. which is Aussie rules football is a fantastic game. I wish it was elsewhere other than just Australia, but a lot of sports and stuff, and I guess probably a lot of my sort of formative musical. Not a lot of them, but just the beginnings of sort of my formative musical, just hearing songs and things like that, I guess.
You played, didn't you play football also in high school? Is that true?
Yeah, I played in Saskatoon in Canada, yeah.
Was that American football, or did you play, was it rugby, or what did you play, or soccer? Or?
It's Canadian rules.
Canadian rules football. Okay.
We just call it football, but it's the CFL rules, like Canadian football.
CFL, right, right.
Yeah, so you get 12 men a side as opposed to 11.
Oh wow.
Three down as opposed to four.
But who's the 12th man? What does the 12th man do? What position?
I think it means usually it's an extra receiver and an extra defensive back.
Okay, gotcha.
CFL
Day. I mean, they're really popular. I mean, we got a lot of pros from the CFL that came over to the NFL, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Joe Theismann, Doug Flutie, Cam Wake,
Warren Moon, I think. Yeah.
Warren Moon. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's some pretty good football, man. There's obviously no league can do what the NFL does, but a lot of guys end up coming out of the CFL to the NFL, and it's. They play in my home province of Saskatchewan, so it's football's a big part of a lot of Canadians' lives, but it's definitely not on the scale of hockey, I guess.
You had no ambitions after high school to become a pro, go pro with your football skills?
I don't think I was good enough.
You don't think so?
the best players in the CIS, which is the league that I played in university.
Right.
A handful each year go to the CFL and kick around for a while. And
right.
There is a Canadian guy hunting for Seattle, I know, and there's a couple other Canadians. It is, but it's a lot of ex-NFL guys in the CFL as well.
Yeah, you would think you'd want a guy from Canada because he's already got the coldness factor, down.
That's true.
No problem, piece of cake there. So he'd be actually a big benefit, during those win games.
They have Canadian content too, saying you have to have enough Canadians on your team. I didn't realize we're going to be chatting so much CFL here.
Saskatchewan is also the home of a lot of, Roddy Piper, right?
He was born here.
He was born there, right? Were you a big Roddy Piper fan? I was,
I enjoy Roddy. He was raised in Winnipeg, I think, but he definitely was born in Saskatoon.
Right.
And so was Joni Mitchell. Wasn't born here, but she considers it her hometown. She grew up here, or in Saskatoon, rather.
And comedian Leslie Nielsen, I think, was also from that area.
Yeah, I think he's from Regina or something, yeah.
Yeah, right. The Top Gun guy.
You get old,
yep. So you got this tour coming up. It's a pretty lengthy tour. Have you guys performed or opened for any of your heroes yet?
Yeah. We opened for John Fogerty in Australia on a tour all over Australia. And that was pretty sensational because I have a lot of memories from when I was a kid in Australia of actually listening to Creedence Clearwater Revival. And so, you know, to get to open for the man is like, I don't know, it's like walking into a movie and getting to interact with the heroic character. It's pretty crazy.
Hey, you guys kind of remind me a little bit of CCR, you know, with the plaid shirts and the, you know, the long hair.
Yeah.
And, you know, it reminds me of back in the day. It's pretty cool.
They are somehow an underrated band. Like,
yeah, I agree with you on that.
They are, like, I wish we, people talk so much about the Beach Boys, and they are good, but we should talk more about Creedence, because they're like a band that no one ever complains when they come on. Everybody has a Creedence song they like, and they're like, Fogerty's like a buddy poet laureate, man. He's like writing lyrics that are like, you know, Mark Twain set to like songs that people will be singing for decades. It's pretty damn impressive.
I mean, they've had a ton of top 40 hits as well.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really something to make, you know, a statement from the band that you're appealing to, you know, kind of like the underground group, you know, album rock group and the top 40 guys, you know. It's quite an accomplishment, I think.
That's what was magical about that time, because it was like the Beatles were the top band, but they were also the most creative and thought-provoking and interesting band. And so, like, you had this mesh of commerce and art that was like, it was like the only time it ever was lined up the same.
Well, you know, if mainstream radio was any good anymore, you guys would be on mainstream radio.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't pretend to understand how radio works.
It doesn't work anymore, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, I was a top 40 disc jockey back in the late 70s. I mean, I was spinning, it was a nice selection. I was playing The Cars and Blondie, and then, of course, disco was still in, so I was doing Donna Summer and things like that. But it was a nice mix. You know,
she's
the Ramones
cool.
were out, you know, so you had a little mix of everybody. But today it's just basically the same old crap, you know, the dance music, and it's kind of a derivative from the disco days, in my opinion.
Yeah, and rock and roll's pretty terrible. Like, everybody's really sad and angry in rock songs
right,
now.
Right, right.
And it's all, like, really... I blame Kurt Cobain for that, even though Nirvana is cool and has some good songs, and I liked it as a kid. But he sure made being a miserable guy a cool thing to do in rock songs. And so now, like... That's sort of what you got. Sucks.
Well, now we got the Sheepdogs, who make it a fun thing again. Rock and roll is fun, you know.
I sure hope so, man. Because like I like listening to the Faces and Rod Stewart songs and stuff, and just like, man, that's good time music. Or like you listen to the band, you know, Rag Mama Rag or something, and it's like, that's a party, man. That's
it
fun
is a party.
Times.
Yeah, you know, I worry about the genre. And you know, because there's a lot of young people today that are just, you know, out of tune with what's going on around them, you know, because they get everything focused on their cell phone, which really bothers me a lot. I mean, there's more to life than, you know, a phone in front of you. And
I'm 31 and I feel the same way. It makes me feel like an old man sometimes.
Well, it's true. You know, it's like me. You know, I feel like I'm out of my... I should have been back in the early 60s as a DJ instead of the 70s. Because I think, just like you guys, you probably felt like you were in the wrong generation, you know?
Yeah, but it's pretty sweet having the old internet, I got to say.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is.
Actually, the point I make about that is like, people always ask me, you know, how did living where you guys grew up affect this, you know, your sound? And I'm like, it didn't really. Like, it's not about geography, because... When I was a kid, well, I was a teenager, I guess. Napster was coming in, and like,
right.
And the internet is there, and so like, I would be listening to like, you know, like Jimi Hendrix or something, and then I would go, man, this is awesome. I would read about Jimi Hendrix, and I'd be like, whoa, maybe I should check out Cream or Led Zeppelin because they seem to be similar. And then like, I could go on to the old Napster there and just dial up whatever. Like, it was just so, that was pretty liberating, even though, you know, there's questions of whether it's ethically moral and stuff, but it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, kids today should appreciate what they have. I mean, even myself as a writer, a journalist, and a radio host, I mean, it's so easy for me to pull up information about the Sheepdogs or about any band in the world, you know, and be well prepared for an interview because I have the internet. You know, if I didn't have the internet,
so.
You know, I'd be sitting in a library somewhere.
There's a lot. I do a lot of unprepared interviews with people. Man,
yeah, I've noticed that.
It just ends up being kind of boring, I guess.
Yep. Well, I try to make it entertaining too, and laid back. You know, just, you know, two guys talking on the phone, pretty much. You know.
That's cool. Do you swear on here, or should I not swear?
Yeah. You're fine. You're fine doing that.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we're coast to coast, but we're not. You know, I don't think we're regulated. By FCC.
I don't want to get the FCC breathing down your neck or anything.
No, I think we're okay.
Okay.
I think we're okay. But, you know, you guys got a big break, but I think you did pay your dues, correct? Before you got that cover on the Rolling Stone, you guys were hitting clubs and things like that for quite a long time, right?
Yeah, we'd been a band for 7 years.
7 years?
Prior to
2011.
Yeah. I don't know. We were we sort of did our thing in Saskatoon to the point where we could, you know, come close to selling out a hometown show, and so we started getting on the road and trying to book gigs and driving around in a van and losing money and meeting all the weird and wonderful people that inhabit a bar in Edmonton on 1:30 a.m. on a Monday night. You know, like weird. You know, we did a lot of pretty terrible gigs.
Well, you got to go through those times. I think everybody does. You know, it's just a learning experience. You know, you get streetwise and all that good stuff, I guess.
But no, it's true.
Yeah.
Especially when you got a bunch of 20-year-old dudes in a van trying to, like, you know, keep accounting of like how much money you're spending on gas,
right.
And
right.
And trying to make $10 work into three meals
yep.
One day. You know, like it's all good stuff.
You know, I just interviewed Marky Ramone before you,
right.
And you know, Marky, of course, was the drummer for the Ramones, and you know they stayed in a van. They toured in a van all the time. They never got a bus. They kept it very, very simple, you know. And they had the camaraderie that way because they were so close to each other. I mean, they were brothers.
That just sounds crazy to me.
Yeah, I know.
If you can afford a bus, get a bus.
I know. That's what they wanted to do. They were in a van,
yeah.
even when they got real popular.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, what I understand, there was an agent that you guys met or something that actually submitted a demo tape to Rolling Stone for the Choose the Cover competition. Is that true?
Yeah, sort of. It was our manager now, but he wasn't then. We
right.
gave him a record. He, you know, just sort of soliciting. He's a successful manager and record label runner or operator here in Canada.
Right.
And he was kind of, he got hit up by a guy from like Atlantic Records who were working with Rolling Stone to put on this competition for unsigned bands. So they were looking for unsigned bands, but they didn't want to have an open submission. So what they did is put out sort of an industry-wide sort of like, hey, who are some unsigned bands that you think might be interesting for this competition, I guess? Which is kind of weird because, like, you'd think if someone thought an unsigned band was cool, they wouldn't be, like, telling everybody to try to, like, sign them for themselves. But I just thought of that now. But anyway, that's how the competition, that's how we kind of got thrown into that whole experience.
And you beat out, like, 15 other bands in the contest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like a musical version of like the March Madness speech
right.
kind of thing.
Well, I'm glad there was somebody with some intelligence at Rolling Stone magazine that figured out this was good music. Because in you know, my opinion, Rolling Stones has gone down, you know, the tubes from the last 20 years or so. You know, well, they've got very political, and they've got away from the music, you know. And, you know, yeah, when they put Justin Bieber on the front page, that kind of really pissed me off, things like that.
Wow.
You know?
If it makes you feel any better or any worse, I guess. But that person probably has since been fired. There's a lot of turnover over there.
Yeah.
The medium of magazines is kind of dying compared to the internet. I think there's been a slow adaptation to the internet. And I think actually the competition itself was an attempt to gain a lot of internet hits or something.
Is that right?
Huh. I think so. I mean, it's all, you know, I think it was all like funded by like a magazine company and stuff anyway, or a hair company or makeup. Or
right.
Something.
Now, it kind of helped you because you got on, did you get on Jimmy Fallon?
Yeah, it was a massive bunch of publicity. You played on Jimmy Fallon. And
right.
Twice.
You got to play the Bonnaroo Music Fest and a couple other things, right?
Yeah, we played that twice, too. We played some really good American festivals. Coachella, the year that they had the Tupac hologram, although I missed it because I was drunk somewhere. I don't know, yeah, it was very helpful to us.
There's a good story about the name of the band, the Sheepdogs. That's kind of close to you, right?
To be honest, I told so many lies about how we got our name that people ask me which one it is. I don't actually know.
So there isn't a good story about the Sheepdog name.
No, that's why I always lie.
They're all lies.
If I have one piece of information for people starting a band, make sure that your band name has a really cool story.
Right.
Because it's like the number one question we get asked all the time, and we don't have a good story. So
you don't have a good story.
So we just start lying about it. Like, I think that's a Beatles thing. Like, I think John Lennon said that he had a dream of Jesus came to him riding a pie or something. Like, call your band Beatles with an A or something stupid.
Right. That's funny. Yeah, you need some kind of urban legend or something like that, you know.
Well, I think like lying in interviews, especially print interviews, is very good because I think that Bob Dylan is basically a boring guy, but he figured out that if he just like has a bunch of misspeak around him, he all of a sudden becomes really interesting.
Now, do you guys have a like an aggressive manager running the band right now? How's that working out?
Yeah, I'd say he's reasonably aggressive.
It just seems you guys are getting, you know, for a rock and roll band, you know, I don't call you Southern Rock because you go off in different tangents. You know, I hear a little bit of everything. I hear some Zeppelin, you know, in the melody. I hear a lot of different things. So I'm not going to classify you as a Southern Rock band. To me, you sound very much like late 60s, early 70s rock band, you know, during that time. But you've gotten far for being a rock band, which is very tough to do nowadays. So somebody's doing something right, you know. I mean, I know you got on the Rolling Stone magazine, but you got to do more than that. You can't just rely on that. So what is your success? How do you measure your success to this point? What's driving it, I guess?
Well, I think that, at least certainly from the business side, our manager has worked really hard to keep us in the spotlight, you know, in a lot of ways. That competition was a massive boost. On the music side, you know, I think we're just kind of like doing a bunch of, like there's a lot of bands doing old school rock and roll influenced things, but they're typically very specific. Like they're sort of like, oh, they're like a rockabilly thing, or they're doing like the soul 69 thing, or they're doing this band sounds like the Stones, or this band sounds like Zeppelin. And I think that we kind of have a much more inclusive, varied approach.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just kind of hits people in the right way. I think it's just like, you know, the genre of rock and roll is not anywhere near the sort of mainstream popularity it once held, but it didn't go away. There's still a lot of people who want to hear guitar riffs and, you know, harmonized vocals, and like I think about like Tom Petty, like was sort of like a 60s rocker, but like in the 80s, you know, and
right.
People still enjoyed his sweet choruses and his nice guitar work and good grooves. Like, it's just solid rock and roll. It's like, maybe it won't always be totally in style, but it's always going to be, people are going to want some, you know, there's going to be a market for it or whatever, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, that was a very good comparison, by the way, because, you know, I always, from Petty, I always hear a little bit of Dylan and a little bit of Roger McGuinn from the Byrds from Petty.
Yeah.
So he's one of those guys you can hear, you know, the early influence, but he's still popular.
He said something like he wanted to be the Byrds mixed with the Rolling Stones. I think that was his crossroad he drew. Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys are doing this basically pretty much the same thing, you know, and we need that. We really do, because that's real music. You know, it's good music.
Well, I think that, I don't know. Like, everybody steals.
Mm-hmm.
We just try to steal from a million people, so it's not obvious.
Right. Well, the Future Nostalgia album, which is your latest release, is an excellent album. I'd give it 5 stars.
There's
a lot of music on there. But they're not like, you know, they're not dragged on. They're short, kind of short and sweet. And you recorded the album out. You got away from the big time studios and you recorded this out in the woods somewhere because you were sick of the studio environment. And I guess it made a big difference in the sound you were aiming for.
Yeah, I think we're just trying to relax. It's very, a lot of like stressful elements to the rock and roll life, like, you know, just the constant travel and being not having like a home base that you can relax in. Like, we just wanted to go someplace that was going to be really like chill, not a lot of people dropping by. You know, if someone was having a wicked party, too bad we can't go because we're out of town, you know, that kind of thing. Like, it was just, it was just kind of like, and also like having to make so many damn business decisions is a real pain in the ass, like,
right.
For being in a band, and it kind of just, we wanted to do something where it was just like, we're here to relax, have fun, and make music, and that's it.
Right. Well, whatever you do, though, forget about the business side of it, because there's a lot of great bands that got screwed.
Well, trust me, I watched that Bad Finger documentary. I'm terrified of that. Didn't work out very well for those guys. No, I just meant for the period of time, like 3 weeks that we were working on a record,
right.
You could just kind of like forget about that side of things.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Okay, now the title, tell me if this is a lie. The title was influenced by Mr. Show with Bob and David on HBO?
That is true, yeah.
Okay, we got one.
Yeah.
That was a good comedy show. I watched that.
I love that. It's my favorite.
Yeah, it was very
show.
Very good.
Yeah.
The one guy, I think it was David that was on Men in Black, right?
Yeah, and like, you know, a million things. And Bob Odenkirk was like the Larry Sanders Show.
Right.
And Breaking Bad, of course, most famously recently.
Yep, that's a good show. You can go on YouTube nowadays and practically see all their shows, which is kind of cool.
Totally, and it's super funny, man. It's just
it's
sketch comedy without any crappy, like Saturday Night, it's like Saturday Night Live would be great if they just made one episode a year.
Right.
And because there's just so much filler every week, because it's just like impossible to crank out that many good sketches. But Mr. Show is really top-notch quality, and it's just really like unique and great mix of like really smart comedy and really silly, stupid comedy.
Are those guys Canadian?
No, they're American.
They're not.
We got a lot of good comedians coming out of here, but not those two.
I mean, you know, Second City TV, you know, a lot of the guys from Saturday Night Live in the beginning.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Aykroyd,
yeah.
Kids in the Hall.
Yep. A lot of
Trailer Park Boys, do you guys like Trailer Park Boys?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, I like those guys a lot.
Yeah, I got to interview a lot of great, legendary rock stars from Canada, you know, like Randy Bachman and
nice.
and Burton Cummings from Guess Who. And
how was Burton?
He's a funny guy, man. He's very, very funny.
He's quite the character. I've met Randy a bunch of times, but I've never met Burton. He kind of fascinates me.
He's a cool guy. You like him a lot.
He
does impressions. he does a fantastic Gordon Lightfoot impression. If you ever see him, ask him to do the Gordon Lightfoot impression.
Okay. I hope to meet him someday. He's a legend.
And Frank Marino, who a lot of people don't think about too much anymore because he hasn't been in, a great guitar player. And I've talked to him, from here from time to time.
Who was he with?
Mahogany Rush.
Right on.
Back in the 70s. Great guitar player. Played a lot of Hendrix covers.
Right on, man.
Yeah. Now, this album's also going to be released on cassette. Is that true?
Yeah. We're selling them for $5 a tape.
That's awesome. How about A-Track?
we did look at that, but we'd have to sell them for like $35 because it's so expensive to manufacture.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I was a big fan of A-Track players. I thought they were great.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some conspiracy as to why they're not anymore.
I thought they were a lot easier than cassettes, actually. You just press a button, go to, four different tracks.
Yeah, I think maybe the sort of younger crowd, people my age certainly can remember having cassette tapes, when they were a kid. Like, before I ever had a CD, I had a bunch of tapes.
You had a lot of cassette tapes?
Yeah. I had, Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince.
Right.
Take the Room.
Yep.
Really classy stuff.
Well, the Walkman was huge. That was, I was in retail electronics for years, and we were the first ones in D.C. to have the Walkman, the Sony Soundabout, it was called back then.
Logged a lot of hours with mixtapes. And actually,
yep.
I think, I definitely listen to a lot of, older music on mixtapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a way to listen to it. Do you have albums? Do you have actual vinyl that you listen to?
Yeah, I got a pretty decent collection. I've got, maybe about 900 records.
Oh, great. Awesome. So what kind of system do you have? What kind of turntable do you have?
It's nothing super fancy. It's a Rega turntable.
Right.
Which is like a British company.
Right.
I bought it in my hometown of Saskatoon. But, I don't know, man, it sounds pretty good to me, and I've just picked up a lot of old-school records from my travels, and I look pretty proud of the old collection.
Yeah. The only thing I worry about is trying to find a needle finding needles are going to be kind of hard nowadays. I guess you can get them.
Pretty easy up here.
Are they? Really? Huh.
Yeah, especially in a city like Toronto, there's tons of hipster cats, running turntables and coffee shops and stuff like that. So it's a pretty easy to do thing.
Well, I want to kind of dissect a little bit the new album.
Sure.
I love it. And some of the tracks I really, really like, I'm going to be by myself. To me, there's a lot of Zeppelin riffs on there. Is that true? I hear Ramble On and Whole Lot of Love in there.
Sure.
I
like those songs.
It's a great song. Let me see. Downtown, and you also have the official video for Downtown, which is excellent jam. It made me, when I saw that, I said, we got to bring E-Tracks back for this one. That's another great melody that reminds me of Zeppelin. Jim Gordon, which is a track that kind of made me feel like a Todd Rundgren feel, some of Todd Rundgren's music. That's why I can't list you guys as Southern rock, because you can't do that. You guys are, eclectic in a way,
I never called us a Southern rock. Half the things we get called, or 90% of them, we never called ourselves. But
right.
Especially when you're from Canada, the term Southern rock is kind of laughable. But
you're right.
Also, the genre of Southern rock isn't even really that good.
Right.
There's lots of, there is plenty of good songs in that genre, but there's a lot of crap too.
Yep.
And like for every good like Black Oak Arkansas record or like song, or every good like what's the other one? The Ozark Mountain Daredevils song, yeah, there's like, you know, 15 bad ones. So.
Right. Right. That's true.
And the best southern rock band is like probably the Allman Brothers, and they were really a blues band. They weren't.
Yeah, exactly. You know. You can't consider the Allman Brothers a southern rock band either.
But then the Allman, they would switch the other way and do something super country, like with Dickey
right.
in the band too. But
they were jazzy too. They were kind of jazzy too. They had some jazz tracks.
Totally. Yeah, Elizabeth Reed and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys are you know, you got a little bit there for everybody, I think. And, you know, you got to definitely have a, you know, like Daryl and Dwight, that track reminded me of David Crosby. It had a, kind of a David Crosby feel to it.
Oh, cool, man. Yeah, I met him one time.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Yeah.
What was that meeting like?
It was interesting. He seemed like, you know, I read his biography, or his autobiography, and... Mm-hmm. You know, he seems like he had lived that life. He's he's been through a lot, man. So I don't want to bad talk to Crosby. He's awesome.
Yeah, he's had a liver transplant, and he's done very well after that.
Yeah, man. I mean, he's still kicking when you consider all the guys that have gone.
He's got his voice is still there too. You know, compared to the other guys in the band. My favorite guy was always Stephen Stills, but his voice is kind of not there anymore, you know?
Yeah, I saw them play, like Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and I saw Buffalo Springfield play,
mm-hmm.
and man, Neil Young was the fresh-faced youngster of Buffalo Springfield, because, like, Stills is just croaking up there and just, like, overplaying guitar solos, and then people are going to hate me for saying this, but and Richie Furay was just kind of like, had a big smile on his face, like he was just kind of happy to be there, and like he wasn't
right.
really doing anything.
Right.
And Neil was just like shredding and
yeah,
and like talking to the crowd and everything. It was
right.
really impressive. Excuse me.
Yeah, you guys did a great cover of Ohio and Down by the River, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, especially the Down by the River cover.
Yeah, we were trying. I mean, we played that cover so many times. And it never really gets any better because it's pretty loose. But I feel like, you know, the man who led Crazy Horse would approve.
Right.
We keep trying to come up with a new cover to do because it's we've done it so many times, but it's so perfect for when. You know, an encore song, because it's just like, we're Canadian, it's a Canadian artist, but it's a Canadian artist that's universally loved around the world, Neil Young.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can just, you know, it's a loose, raggedy jam with a big sing-along chorus. It's perfect. It's just, it's hard not to keep doing it.
Well, you got a lot of great, there's a lot of great lyrics on this new album as well. Talk to me a little bit with the Bad Lieutenant, which was a really cool tune. Talk about a little bit about the lyrics of that song.
Yeah, I think that's like the one time. I think I was just like ripping the sort of main riff, and I kind of started singing "I'm a bad, bad man," and so that's it. Kind of all came from there.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually had the title. This is like the only time that I think I had the title before I wrote the melody. But it was actually the title to a different song. And I knew I wanted the song to be kind of like about a sort of dirty, bad police officer. And I'd watched both of those movies too, the Harvey Keitel version and the Nick Cage version, Bad Lieutenant.
Right, I saw that movie, yep.
Yeah, they're pretty hard movies. But,
yeah.
I don't know, just thought it was an interesting topic, you know, dirty policeman. And then, you know, probably somehow, inevitably, a little bit of the song becomes autobiographical inadvertently.
Right. Good song. Really good song.
Cool, man.
Yeah. Have Mercy. That's on the album, right? On the new album?
It's just a it's a bonus on the.
It's a bonus.
On the ballot,
that's why, because I didn't see it on the track listing. But,
yeah.
But it came up like it was from the new album.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorite tracks too. I dug that because it reminded me of the Allman Brothers.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
That's a song that I just made in my mom's basement.
Really?
When I had a little time off, yeah.
Wow.
I just kind of slapped that together. I played some crappy saxophone on there, and I think I was hitting like jars with pens to make like percussion sounds.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty lo-fi.
You guys got a lot of talent. The talent for playing instruments are there. You know, you guys are very, very, very talented. Also, Jim Sullivan was a kind of a cool instrumental that you guys kind of slipped in there. I like that one. I like that track a lot as well. That was a good
song.
Yeah.
I don't know. I sing so much, it's nice to have a little moment where it's like, all right, let's just have some music playing.
Yeah. So what's next? I mean, from this point, you've got a lot of nostalgia from the new album. From, you know, I mean, we can, you know, visualize so many bands that you guys, you know, bring us back to. What do you think the next album's gonna be like? Any idea?
I do kind of have an idea. We have a new guitar player since our Future Nostalgia record.
Right.
Things didn't work out with Rusty. Mm-hmm. He was a great help for making that record. But we have this new guy. His name's Jimmy Boskill, and he's I can't say enough good things about him. He's an incredible player, very, very talented, but very tasteful in his approach. And you know, we kind of just lucked into him, you know, friend of a friend type of thing, but he loves the same kind of music we do. And, you know, he loves rock and roll. He loves, you know, the guys like Paul Kossoff, who played guitar with Free, and the Allman Brothers, and like sort of the specific references that we really dig, you know, Humble Pie and Peter Frampton. And
yep.
Actually understanding that Peter Frampton is actually a super wicked, badass guitar player, and you know, early ZZ Top and things like that, and but also he's a fan of country and traditional music, which we have an appreciation for as well.
Sure.
So I don't know, we between that and just the five guys we have, it's fantastic, man. Like the last 2-3 months, the shows have been better than we've ever played, and I just think we're kind of moving into a new level. So We're actually gonna once we get off the road, I think at the end of this year, we're gonna get right going on another album, because we just feel like the momentum is going, and we're just clicking, these five dudes, and we got a lot of weapons between, you know, my brother playing keys and trombone, and Jimmy is not just a guitar player, like he's playing pedal steel with us on stage now, and he can play you know, banjo and fiddle and all kinds of interesting things. So just you know, more paints in our palette to choose from, you know.
Ewan, do me a favor and name all the guys in the band and what instrument they play. That's what we
sure
can give a plug to everybody.
Well, I'm the guitar. I play a mix of rhythm and lead. I sing lead vocals.
Right.
Ryan Gullin plays bass and backing vocals. Sam Corbett is our drummer and backing vocals. Seamus Curry, my brother, is our keyboard player, and he also plays trombone and sings backing vocals. And then Jimmy Boskill is guitar, a lot of lead guitar, and backing vocals as well. All five of us sing.
You guys are a great band. One video that took me for a loop was The Way It Is.
Yeah.
That's a crazy video, man.
Yeah, it's a good one.
People got to go on YouTube, and you got to punch in The Sheepdogs The Way It Is, because you're going to be very, very surprised. You know, everyone's playing, they're playing baseball, and that's all I'm going to tell you. And they're playing baseball with kids, and it's got a kind of a surprise, you know, take of the game of baseball with adults and kids. So everybody go on YouTube and punch that in, because it's an insane video, but with great music.
I'm glad you like that. But all credit goes to the Sklar brothers, because they're the couple comedians from L.A. that they're the ones that came up with that.
Is that right?
Yeah. Funny guys, man. Great comedians.
Here's a question I ask everyone that I've interviewed. And I get some, surprising answers, actually. If you had a Field of Dreams wish, you know, like the movie Field of Dreams.
Right.
And I gave you a wish to perform or collaborate with anyone from the past or present, who would that be? And this could be somebody that's already passed on.
Well, that's a very interesting question, because a lot of my favorite people that I immediately think of, like, as much as it's the talent of somebody, it's also like, would you be able to work with them? You know, are they good collaborators? Am I a good collaborator? You know, like, I want to go something like Paul McCartney or George Martin related. Yeah, I don't know, man. That's a tough question. I guess I'm a massive fan of like guys like Stevie Wonder and Paul McCartney and Sly from The Family Stone and Fogerty. But they were like guys that were so assured in their vision that they didn't really need collaborators, and they needed like good musicians so they could tell what to do. But that's the thing, is collaborating is such a tough thing.
You know, I'm always a big Sly fan as well. You know, and it's a shame what happened to him, what drugs did to him, because he had so much more, I think, he could have given. And that's what's happened to music, is, you know, a lot of these guys, they're not around anymore to influence, the next generation, which is a shame. You know, like Hendrix. Imagine if Hendrix was still alive today, all the different things he could have done, you know?
Yeah, there definitely would have been some good Hendrix albums. There also would have been some like really bad 80s, like the bad 80s gated reverb drum sound
yeah.
Hendrix albums.
Yeah.
And then he would have had a comeback in the 90s, like with a really intimate, unplugged, basically Eric Clapton's career. Like, look
right.
at Eric Clapton's career. That's like, Eric Clapton was awesome in the 60s, and then he had like two good 70s years, and then he got lost in a druggy fog for a while, and eventually came out of it. But it's interesting to think about, you know, like, what would Kurt Cobain be so famous if he hadn't died? I don't know.
Yeah, that's true too, you know. Yeah, he was part of that 27 Club, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad to get through that year, although I'm not nearly as famous as those guys.
But, you know, as far as rock is concerned, you know, the last time rock or any kind of form of rock was, you know, pretty famous was those grunge years, you know? It was the Nirvanas. It was the Disturbs, Queen of the Stone Age, you know, that period.
They
know?
Ruined it.
Queen
of the Stone Age are cool. I don't want to. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, maybe there is something to be said, the fact that when rock and roll stopped being fun, all of a sudden people went to pop music, and, like, I don't know, is rap music fun? Like, I don't really get, look, I hear the modern rap, it sounds really, I don't know, it doesn't sound fun to me, but I guess people are having fun listening to it, so, like, rock, I guess people have fun listening to this crappy mainstream rock, too. I don't know. I don't know anything, man, I got to... I feel like musically, I just feel like I live in like my little safe place. Like, I have my Burt Bacharach records and my Allman Brothers records, and listening to my Burt, you know, my Guess Who records and stuff. And I don't know. I just sort of hide away from the modern world.
Right. But it's all about keeping good music in the mainstream, because, you know, that's. It just fell off the planet, you know, and all the good talent and people that play great music, you know. I mean, the artists. you know, people that are running the music business don't give a damn about the music, you know, pretty much. And it's a shame. They're just looking for the dollars, I guess.
It's more business than music.
More business than music. Exactly right. You and you have anything else to promote? We're going to go ahead and wrap it up now.
You can find our band at the usual places that bands are.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're coming down and doing some American shows throughout the summer in certain areas, but nothing firm yet. But, that's about it.
Please come down to Florida. I live in the Tampa Bay area. We have Dickie Betts lives down here. He's not too far from me. And him and
I heard he's a madman.
Yeah. He does a lot of charity concerts, though, which is really cool, and he plays all his, you know, famous stuff with the Allman Brothers.
Well, I'm a massive Dickie Betts fan. Like, he's one of my all-time favorite guitar players. I mean, that when you think about the Allman Brothers had, I mean, they're like sort of like the Mickey Mantle, like, I don't know, what's the Ruth Garrick, rather. Like, you know, the Yankees had Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. They're like those versions of those guys in that band. Like, it's just crazy how good they were.
Ewan, thank you so much for being on the show today, man, and for all the great music with the Sheepdogs, and good luck on the tour.
Thanks a lot, brother.
All right, man. Take care.
Bye-bye.
You can purchase the Sheepdogs' exciting new release entitled Future Nostalgia at Amazon.com. Visit the Sheepdogs for their latest show schedule and most recent news at www.thesheepdogs.com official website, or www.facebook.com/thesheepdogs on Facebook, or twitter.com/thesheepdogs on Twitter. Join me bi-weekly Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on The Ray Shasho Show. Very special thanks to Chipster PR and Consulting, Inc. for hooking us up today with Ewan Curry of the Sheepdogs, and especially Don and Doug Newsome with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. Coming up next on The Ray Shasho Show, Ginger Gilmore, author of the blockbuster novel Memoirs of the Bright Side of the Moon. Ginger is the ex-wife of Pink Floyd's legendary guitarist, singer, and songwriter, David Gilmour. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on The Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. And don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, The True Story of an Eclectic American Family and Their Wacky Family Business, available now at Amazon.com. You'll live it. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio, Station 1.